LeBron James is no stranger to getting a new coach, and he will be getting that once again this next season. Amber and Ian is presented to you by Progressive Insurance. You can find him at Ian Fitz ESPN. You can find me at Amber W Sports. LeBron James, assuming he's playing next season, he will be playing for his 10th head coach. And it's, what, 23 years, I think, we're at with LeBron James, which is an unbelievable hell of a run here for an NBA career. It's also a lot of coaches, Ian. Let's be real. And at this point, I wonder how it's looked at around the league. How attractive is it to actually coach who is hands down easily the greatest player of his generation?
Great question. His debut with Paul Silas as his head coach, 03. You have had a lot of conceived children graduate from college the last time, going back to the first time LeBron James entered the NBA with his first head coach in Paul Silas. So, it's every other year. On average, 10 coaches, right? So
2.5 years, I think, is the average tenureship of a head coach for LeBron. And that's messed up the only reason it's that long is because of Spo and Mike Brown. I mean, that's the only reason. Otherwise, goodness, it would be like a year.
Yeah, I mean, like Dave Blatt, right, goes to the NBA Finals and gets canned. So let that sink in. I mean, again, look, the Lakers last year go to the Western Conference Finals and get, obviously swept by the eventual champs, but you were just in the Western Conference Finals. And you just gave the champs all they could handle, if you want to call it that, right? In a very short series again, but they led at halftime in every damn game. I mean, they had double-digit leads in the second half in every single game. So is that coaching? Okay, maybe. But to answer your question, would I want to coach LeBron James? Hell yeah. One, I'm going to give you about 5 million reasons why I would love to coach LeBron James with the LA Lakers. And I think there's only a handful of teams that any coach would say, I would even leave a job to go to that gig. And that's the Lakers in the NBA, the Yankees in Major League Baseball, and the Dallas Cowboys in the NFL. Probably the New York Rangers or the Detroit Red Wings, right, in the NHL. But, I mean, they're just different. It's like Bama football. Kalen DeBoer just left a team that he took to the national championship. Why? And the old saying, Amber, you don't want to be Ron Zook. You don't want to be the guy that followed the guy.
Nope.
And the coaches, there's always going to be not just one, but many coaches that believe I can change that. I can win. Because if you don't have that confidence, you don't belong coaching at that level to begin with. So to answer your question, and setting the money aside, because it is the Lakers, because it is LeBron on the other side, I would believe, you know what? I can take that guy back to the promised land. Sign me up. I'd coach him.
But Ron Zook came from, where did he come from? He was an assistant coach, right, before he replaced Spurrier at Florida.
Oh, man, that's a Google search.
And so, I know, I'm trying to go back in my
head. I got it. Go ahead. You talk, I'll Google.
Ohio State. He was the defensive backs coach at Ohio State. There you go. Before he ended up coming to Florida as a coordinator. Then he goes to special teams coordinator at Florida, assistant coach. Anyway, bounces around. Then he goes to the NFL as a D-backs coach, comes back to Florida. So he had bounced around a lot.
He was a DC of the Saints before
the Saints was the one right before he comes back to replace Spurrier. So Zook had bounced around a lot, but none of the positions were head coach of the Gators. And also, he'd spent a lot of time in that organization in other roles. So yes, when that opportunity comes to you, even though you're replacing the man in Steve Spurrier, you still take the job. I think it depends on that. It depends who you are, where you're coming from, your vantage point, and also what your bank account looks like. For example, I don't agree with you that it's just anybody takes this Lakers job. If I'm Tyronn Lue right now, I ain't leaving the Clippers. And I understand the Clippers have their own problems. But the advantage you have with the Los Angeles Clippers, who are trying to extend you right now if you're Ty Lue, is that you have the richest owner in the entire NBA. So money ain't no issue for you in a way that the Lakers cannot compete with. And then second, you're not going to get dismissed with LeBron or right after LeBron, which Ty Lue's already been through that. Yes, Ty Lue did not get fired because of LeBron. He got fired immediately after LeBron because LeBron left that franchise in shambles. That's what LeBron does, Ian. LeBron leaves your franchise in shambles. So how many years are you getting out of LeBron left in Los Angeles? Even if he opts in or even if he opts out and re-signs with the Lakers, you're still talking probably a couple of years, right? And then he's going to leave it, and he's going to leave it in smithereens. So there's a good chance that even if this next coach works out during the LeBron years, that coach is going to be left with a mess after LeBron. That's not that attractive, I don't think, to a coach like Ty Lue, who already has one of 30. Now, if you don't have one of 30, then it's a bit of a different conversation, because any job as a head coach in the NBA is clearly an attractive one.
Yeah, no, that last part is a big part of the conversation. But it ain't Ty Lue's decision right now, because he's under contract with the Clippers. They're trying to get him extended past the 25-26 season. So, you know, Steve Ballmer and the Clippers still have control over Ty Lue. But, I mean, am I Eric Spoelstra leaving Miami to go to the Lakers? No,
hell
because
no.
You're in green there. I mean, that's home.
Hold on. How dare you?
But I'm using him as an example of the guy who does have one of 30. But
also, LeBron tried to get him fired after
that's
year
home.
One in
Miami. He started out as a guy in the video room. So those kind of guys, they're not leaving to go to that ultimate gig, right? I mean, well, but you look at Mike McCarthy right now. I mean, he was still collecting a check and was like, yeah, no, I'll go coach the Cowboys. I'm in. Why? It's the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, but do you think everybody feels that way about the Cowboys? Like, there's so much scrutiny that's attached to coaching the Dallas Cowboys. And then also, of course, you're dealing with Jerry and all that.
It's
the star on the helmet.
That's it.
And the microscope that comes with that. If I'm a certain caliber of coach, or I already have a certain bank account, I ain't messing with that. Like, why deal with that crap?
Look, if I'm Matt LaFleur, am I leaving Green Bay? No, you have a great young nucleus, you
exactly.
know.
Yeah.
But if you are not one of 32 in the NFL, hell yeah. Or if you just sat out for a year like Sean Payton just did, right, and then jumped back in with Denver, you had to recharge the batteries. I would say 90 out of 100 coaches would say hell yes to Jerry Jones. Same thing with the Yankees. You know, 90 out of 100 managers would say, hell yes. Why? It's the New York bleeping Yankees. There's just something different about a handful of jobs. And the Lakers are one of those teams. Bama football, one of those teams. Ohio State football, one of those teams. Lakers, damn sure, with all those banners and all that history, going back to Jerry West, you know, and then the different eras. It's just that attractive to any coach who has that opportunity to go and say, you know what? Yeah, I can handle that. I can handle LeBron at the end of his career. I can take him back to the finals. 90 out of 100 believe they are able to do it because that's how confident they are in themselves.
It is a sport of mad men and women, right? Where yep. all sports, I should say, all professional sports, where the people that coach in professional sports are unusually competitive. And so you're right. There's probably a whole lot of people that think I would be different, right? Even if the average coach lasts 2.5 years with LeBron James and he's a coach killer and he leaves the franchise in smithereens, I would be different
yep.
because that's the kind of belief that they have to have in themselves to even be coaching at that level. So
to be one of 30, you have to have that kind of – it's a fine line, I think, Amber, and I'm curious to see if you agree or disagree with this. I think it's a fine line between being that arrogant as a coach and that confident as a coach to be able to go into a situation like that and say, yeah, I'm your guy.
Yeah, you have to have some arrogance, frankly. You have to have a ton of confidence. I mean, when you're in that world – cockiness is a virtue that you need. It's a necessity. You have to sort of have this inflated self-belief, this overinflated self-belief. Otherwise, you would never get anything done. And so I would imagine whoever ends up taking that job does think that they'll do it differently than even Darvin Ham did it. And the coaches that we've seen coach LeBron in Los Angeles, I'm not sure have necessarily been treated that fairly or even really had the opportunity to have that kind of semblance of success. I mean, there's videos right now circulating that have gone viral on the internet of LeBron taking the clipboard from Darvin Ham and drawing up the plays himself while the Lakers were playing the Dallas Mavericks last year. Like, LeBron is the type of superstar who he takes over. And he's not only going to have an input on your job and your job security, but also he's going to quite literally sometimes take over the coaching job. And I'm guessing that's probably annoying, frankly, for coaches to deal with, but also in turn, you're getting one of the greatest players to ever play the game, and you're getting the purple and gold. Coming up next here on Amber and Ian, should we be concerned about Joe Burrow's recovery from that season-ending wrist injury? He had some interesting things to say today. That's next on ESPN Radio.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Burrow will be back and presumably healthy, playing for the Cincinnati Bengals once again. And he's back. He's practicing. He's out there doing work. But he didn't necessarily sound like it was no big deal being out there. I don't know if it's raising alarms there for Bengals fans, but it was a bit interesting to hear from Burrow today. We'll get that sound to you. Amber and Ian is presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive, they are making things even easier. They're going to help you bundle your home and car insurance together so that you can save on both. Learn more at progressive.com or at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. So Joe Burrow is back. He's back talking to microphones. He's back throwing a football, Ian. But take a listen to Joe Burrow talking about easing back into practice as he recovers from that wrist injury.
Be out there for training camp, get as many reps as I can with the guys. I'm going to be smart about it. You know, if I need a break, I need a break. The wrist has good days and bad days, just like the knee did. We're still pretty early. We still got a ways till the season. So we're going to make sure that we give it the breaks that it needs. We're going to be smart about it, but you know, we're getting through it and continuing to improve, you know, mentally and physically every day.
Does that concern you? The good days, bad days,
no.
Not sounding 1,000% confident about the rest.
No, you know, I think the what surprised me is how it never got out, how much more serious it now seems that it was, not seems, but was, than we all really knew. I mean, that's that tone where you also called it, you know, a very difficult injury. I thought that was very eye-opening. And then when he got into, you know, hey, you know, the ACL, when he tore his knee up, I mean, you know, they say it's a 9-month recovery, but I really felt confident, 100% confident in the knee right about the year mark. And this is the wrist was a 6 to 7 month recovery. And he feels like he needs a couple more months to be 100% confident in it. And that goes right to, as he pointed out, right to training camp. So not week one, but training camp. So that was the biggest thing I took away, was this was more serious than we all knew about. And a remarkable job by the Bengals keeping that 100% in-house, because that franchise did a hell of a job staying alive in the postseason hunt. You know, I mean, week 16, they were still alive mathematically. Jake Browning did a great job filling in. I never saw that damn thing coming, right? And they end up 9-8.
I mean, I've honestly, until this moment, I had forgotten about the job Jake Browning did. You were absolutely right. I forgot about that down the stretch of the season.
Like, did he go for 320 on 20 of 28? I mean, what in the hell? I mean, so, you know, and that gives you confidence as an entire organization. When you got like Burrow goes down and you're still fighting to stay alive from week 11 to week 17, and you find a way to still, you know, stay alive till week 17. But the biggest thing with Burrow out there throwing today, and you ever saw him rip one also, Amber, right? These were all a lot of touch passes and whatnot, but the ball looked to be coming out of his hand, you know, really clean. And again, my biggest takeaway, this was more serious than any of us outside of that organization really knew about.
Well, I mean, we knew, and I've heard other people say that as well. We knew, obviously, that it was pretty serious if he was missing the rest of the regular season. Do you think, what would have been the advantage for the Bengals to kind of keep it under wraps? I just feel like because we weren't hearing from Joe Burrow, that we didn't realize the pain that could be associated with this. And I also wonder, because it's a wrist, if we're not as familiar, like when it was his ACL, you know, it's obvious, right? That's an obvious injury. We see it all the time. We can all, I think, understand, even if we haven't had it ourselves, how much that would suck. You know how it is working right back from that. You've seen a billion athletes do it. I wonder if it's because it was specifically the wrist that we were sort of just minimizing it anyways, because it's a wrist.
Yeah, you remember when it happened, right? It looked like, you know, his arm almost went dead.
Right.
And I really thought, I mean, you and I talked about it, you know, that Monday after, it looked like a stinger. Mm-hmm. And he just couldn't grip the ball, and just, the feeling never really came back. So they finished the game without him. And then it comes out, no, hell no, he's done. It's a wrist injury, throwing hand, oh bleep. But then you really never heard anything again. So his tone of voice today, in his first comments coming back, obviously, you know, with RM's rookie mini camps and OTAs and whatnot. I mean, just to hear how his delivery, calling it much more difficult than the knee, and you know, it's going to take a couple more months before he has, you know, 100% confidence in it. That was the biggest, like, oh bleep moment that I had today watching him in that post practice presser. I mean, you could tell it even in the way he looked at the media there that were assembled at you know, Bengals minicamp, that this was a very serious moment and almost like a hell yeah, I'm starting to come back moment for Joe Burrow. That's the way I took it.
He said, one of the things that I thought was interesting that he said in this press conference is he said that he was flying blind at the beginning of this injury, unlike his other injuries. And I mean, one of the things that we don't talk about enough is all the damn injuries that Joe Burrow has suffered. Like, that, so far he has not been a durable quarterback in the National Football League, as great as he has been when he is in fact healthy. But he said that with this one, he was flying blind. For example, when he strained his calf back in, 2023 in training camp, he called Aaron Rodgers to get advice on working through a strained calf and recovering from a strained calf and what should he expect. He said with this specific wrist injury, unlike all of his other injuries, there was no one to call. That he didn't know any other players in the NFL that had this same sort of wrist injury that they were recovering from at his position in the same way. And so he felt, when it first happened to him, like he was very much flying blind through this whole process and really didn't know what to expect, unlike blowing out his knee when a bunch of other dudes have done that around him in the NFL. I thought that was interesting. And then the other one was the thing that you mentioned, where he talked about how difficult it had been. But at the same time, he does reference, as difficult as this injury has been, it's not my most difficult. And of course, he talked about how he did tear a bunch of ligaments in his knee back in
ACL, MCL, PCL, right? And meniscus, yeah, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, just ripped the knee to pieces.
Yeah, so as much as this one has sucked, it hasn't sucked as much as that, apparently. But what I guess has sucked is just not having anybody to sort of consult other than the medical professionals about this thing in that world.
Yeah, I mean, especially a quarterback, right, who has played at his level, gotten to a Super Bowl, you know, a play or two away from winning the Lombardi, and you have a wrist, a tear to a ligament in your throwing hand. Mm-hmm. That to me would scare me more than my knee. Not kidding.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's just because I've dealt with 16 on my right foot, but you never want a lower extremity injury, because without your legs, that's your mode of transportation.
Right.
But as a quarterback, right? I mean, that's your throwing hand, and if you have numbness in your index finger or your bird finger or your thumb, and you can't grip a damn football, I'm 100% confident. If I'm a professional athlete, I can come back from a knee injury.
Right.
To your point, and the way he said it today, we've seen other guys do that. Every year we see guys do that. In multiple sports we see guys do that. Torn ligament in your throwing hand, and you ain't got feeling in part of your hand, that would scare the ever-loving hell out of me. And I think that's why we saw the tone and the mannerisms and this kind of peel back the curtain, this is what I've been dealing with type moment from Joe Burrow.
Yeah, I agree with that. So it does sound like, though, that he feels confident that he'll be back in full form by training camp. We will see. Obviously, the Cincinnati Bengals need him, although, like you said, in playoff contention there, even without him at the end of the season, they also finished last in that division. And we know if they're going to actually be true competitors and contenders once again, Joe Burrow is going to need to stay healthy for an entire 17. Let's get you an NBA update.
Amber Nian.
Another long three and another bank. Putting on a show.
NBA playoff update.
The Celtics are up at 10 at the half over the Cleveland Cavaliers, 59-49. This game was a lot closer than I think most people expected through the majority of the first two quarters, but then the C's started pulling away here as we got into the second. Now this game is back in action. It just tipped off. We're going to continue to keep you updated on this live action all throughout Amber and Ian tonight. And then we are going to hop off air a little bit early. We're going to make some way for Mavericks Thunder. Game one. That game is going to tip off at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, which means coverage is going to start right here on ESPN Radio at 9 p.m. Eastern.
Two TV night for me.
Two TV night.
Stars and Mavs.
Hockey on. Yeah, you have hockey on as well, so you've got that to monitor, which we are keeping you updated all night on Amber and Ian. It's been a lot lately with the NHL playoffs and the NBA playoffs, and this happens every single year. It's sensory overload. And then you had the Tom Brady roast. I mean, that was taking everybody by storm.
You picking a Derby winner and Mystic Dan? I mean, come on.
Me nailing the Derby winner? Yeah, we came in with the show with that last night. You missed that. I mean, I am a horse racing expert. And then I declared myself a horse racing expert and then proceeded to call him Magic Dan later in the show. Coming up next, we're going to find out what's a big deal and not a big deal. We'll see who's ready tonight. Mavericks Thunder coming your way right here on ESPN Radio in just about 30 minutes from now. So we'll be hopping off air early, a little bit early here on Amber and Ian. Amber and Ian presented to you by Progressive Insurance. You can find him at Ian Fitz ESPN. You can find me as well at Amber W Sports. One of the things that we always like to do here is tell you what's a big deal and what's not a big deal. So let's get to it.
It's making headlines.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
But is it a big deal? Or not a big deal with Amber and Ian.
And our producer, James Steele. Hello, James.
Hello.
Sorry, I'm watching a replay of Rangers Canes right now. This thing's gotten chippy. And your guy, your former Pittsburgh Penn, Jake Guentzel, two cheap shots. Bam, bam.
Good.
Into the box you go. Box of shame.
Who was stupid about hockey? I'm sorry. I hate that about hockey. Like, just play hockey.
Did he cheap shot Jacob Trouba?
It was Foxy.
He probably
Fox.
Deserved it.
I think it was Fox.
Okay. Well,
you would like that, James. It's like hockey becomes like wrestling on ice.
I don't like that part of it. Nice. I'm more of a skill hockey guy myself. I like to watch the...
We got 4-on-4 open ice hockey, so you'll enjoy the next minute and 10 seconds.
All right. So the WNBA plans to commit $50 million over the next 2 years to provide full-time charter flight service for its teams during the season. The league's commissioner announced Tuesday in a move that was addresses years of player safety concerns. Quote, we intend to fund a full-time charter for this season, Commissioner Kathy Engelbert said in a meeting with sports editors. She said the league will launch the program, quote, as soon as we can get planes in places. Amber, big deal, not a big deal. The WNBA going to charter flights.
Yeah, this is a huge deal. WNBA players have been calling for this forever, and of course they have. I can't imagine having to fly commercial to games and also with the logistics of it all when all of their sports operate this way. When collegiate sports, not every sport, but when we see collegiate football operate this way. And so it stands to reason that we could see women's professional basketball operate this way. Now, I understand that there is money and that there's revenue and that there's people that are going to throw out the NBA supports the WNBA argument from a revenue perspective and yada, yada, blah, blah, blah. I think it's a pretty basic thing in terms of employment comfort to offer this service to your athletes that have to travel constantly and all the time for these games. I think it makes a lot of sense. And obviously with the growth of women's basketball, I think it'll end up coming back in their pockets as well with the health of the WNBA. I mean, Ian.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to cost about $25 million over the next 2 years, and it's worth every penny, in my opinion. They deserve it. I mean, it wasn't that long ago where at the Final Four, for the men, you have these state-of-the-art weight rooms, and the women had like a couple of dumbbells and a bench and a treadmill. Well, we got that fixed. Now we got this fixed. Good job. Well done. About damn time. Imagine Brittany Griner sitting in coach. Let that sink in, right?
Well, then it's also just the stupid logistics of it. I mean, like, oh, well, we all have to get from here to there. So you're like, we get on this flight. Now this flight's full and I'm going to need you to go on this other flight. Now there's delays because, you know, Delta's delayed and American's over here and this, they canceled their flight. I mean, can you imagine? Just that's got to be the most frustrating part of it all. So, of course, when you're talking sports, particularly professional sports, if there is a will, there is a way. You need to try to find a way to make the charter flights happen. I'm glad they're doing it.
All right. I feel like if I don't bring this up in this segment, then you guys will yell at me. Kansas City Chiefs wide receiver Rashee Rice is a suspect in an alleged assault that injured a man at a Dallas nightclub earlier this week. Police there confirmed to the Dallas Morning News on Tuesday. The newspaper citing law enforcement officials reported that officers were dispatched early Monday morning to the nightclub after reports of an assault. A man was taken to a hospital with non-life-threatening injuries, including swelling on the side of his face, the officials told the Morning News. The chief said they had no comment. Big deal, not a big deal, Ian. Rashee Rice in trouble again.
Hell yeah, it's a big deal. And who's around him? Who's advising him right now? After you caused a six-car crash going 100...
Not our law firm. Right. Not Lindsey Wilson, PLLC. We do not represent Rashee Rice.
I mean,
if we did, different story.
No, would it?
Yes. I mean,
but look, you're going 119 down, you know, 75 Central Expressway in the middle of the day. That is a very congested road. I mean, right near Knox Henderson. Well, I mean, that's right near downtown Dallas. And you had Marahucci in the car. And you walked right by the four cars where you caused the pileup. Not a care in the world. You strolled right by them. The marijuana in the car is a big deal in Texas. It is not legal in the state of Texas where I live. So you have this all hanging over your head. You're facing multiple felony charges and a suspension from the NFL. And what do? You knock the snot out of a photographer at a Dallas nightclub, lit kitchen, at the early hours of Sunday night / Monday morning. He needs better people around him to say, you know what, this is not a good deal to be going out on a Sunday night till whatever it was. And it damn sure is a worse idea to hit a photog or
allegedly.
Anyone for that
allegedly.
Matter.
Allegedly. He allegedly did that. Yes, obviously, all of this is a massive deal, and largely because your Kansas City Chiefs, James, about to not have Rashee Rice. I mean, that's what we know. And I already said that after the initial crash. I mean, right when the crash happened, I said, this dude's about to get hit with a bunch of felonies. And so you're
right.
Already going to have a problem with him ever. And I know at the time, like, I remember there was at the time, Ian, you were thinking maybe not, that he, you know, somehow find a way back onto the football field.
That was before marijuana.
And then we found out that detail, obviously. And then some of the additional stuff that he did with walking away from the scene of the crime and whatnot, allegedly. But
no, there's video of that. That's not alleged. That's not
still
alleged.
Still covering my ass.
That's
but the point
right
is, the point, yes, but he has not been convicted of doing so. So technically, still allegedly, even if we all saw it. However, now with these allegations on top of all of that, I mean, forget about it. You ain't sorry, James. Rice ain't playing for you.
Yeah, they loaded up on wide receiver here in the offseason. So
which is there's a reason that they did, mind you, because of all this nonsense, right?
I'm just surprised he was so
indicative of his future.
He was a model guy at SMU. I mean, I am shocked by this. I really am.
Money, a little money, and some power, and he decided to throw it all away. That Lamborghini just had to go fast, and he just had to, you know, not be able to control himself, allegedly, out at night in a nightclub. Not the first NFL player we've seen throw his life away, or throw his career away.
Without.
Shouldn't say throw his life away. More to it, but go ahead.
NHL announced the Hart Trophy finalists today. Colorado Avalanche center Nathan MacKinnon, Edmonton Oilers center Connor McDavid, and Tampa Bay Lightning winger Nikita Kucherov are the finalists for the 2023-24 Hart Memorial Trophy, given to the player judged to be most valuable to his team in the regular season. McDavid and Kucherov are both MVPs in previous years. MacKinnon is seeing his first Hart Trophy. MacKinnon has finished second twice and third once. Both McDavid and Kucherov had 100 assists this year, which is a crazy total of assists. Big deal, not a big deal, Amber, Hart Trophy finalists.
I mean, obviously this is a huge deal because there's a Florida Panther involved. Also a big deal that you're asking me hockey information. So that in and of itself is a big deal. But yes, there's a Florida Panther involved. There's a Florida with no preparation. You're asking me hard-hitting hockey analysis here. No, obviously, it is the Hart Trophy.
A Tampa Bay Lightning. I know you.
I mean, Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yeah, you're a
see, I'm already confused.
You're a Florida front runner.
I'm a Florida front runner. It's one of my two Florida teams. See, here's what you do. If you're not really a hockey fan, if you don't know hockey, you just take every team in the state, even though they are fierce rivals, and also just squared off in the first round. Does not matter. It depends who's winning. This season, the Florida Panthers are much better than the Lightning. Last season, I was wearing a Lightning hat. So you can see I have no morality when it comes to my hockey allegiance. Also, I've gotten to live in both places, so it's worked out well for me. But sure, James, it's a Hart Trophy. It's a big deal. Ian?
I just think it's a big deal that you actually admitted that. You know what? I am a hockey front runner. I don't give a damn which team, as long as one of them is winning. Now she's wearing a Bruins hat, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, because
no,
the Bruins beat Florida 5-1. So there
Too
you go.
Too far. No. Nay. Just it can only be Florida teams. Relax. I have some boundaries. Yeah. Just a Florida front runner. No Boston teams ever entering that conversation, I assure you.
Amazon must be showing up at my house. Dogs are barking. All right, go ahead. Sorry.
One more real quick, another hockey one.
You would think your dogs would be desensitized to Amazon by now by how much it shows up at your house.
When any one of my girls show up, my wife or one of my two daughters or Amazon, they go absolutely ballistic. Must not have been Amazon. It must have been just a fellow dog walking by or something because howl going.
They protected you from that.
Right, there you go.
Big deal, not a big deal that Ian poodle. Apparently keeps Amazon in business.
Oh, have this family? My mom?
Me too. I'm not even ashamed of it. I'm like, you know what? Bezos, take my money, buddy. Like, the best invention ever. Thank you for making my life so much easier.
All right. One more real quick. Another NHL news story. The San Jose Sharks won the draft lottery tonight, earned the right to have the number one overall pick in the NHL draft for the first time in franchise history. The Sharks finished last in overall standings and retained their position in the lottery. Now the Sharks have the opportunity to select Boston University center Macklin Celebrini, who is ranked first among North American skaters by NHL Central Scouting. Ian, big deal, not a big deal. Sharks getting Macklin Celebrini here.
Hell, NHL draft yeah, it's a big deal. I mean, and one, because the Blue Jackets didn't get him. We're drafting fourth. Sucks to be us yet again. Even in the offseason, we can't get a win. But this is a cool story. Celebrini, his dad is like the head, Amber, of health and nutrition for the Golden State Warriors. And last year, they're playing in Chicago. He's got a tournament there and in the suburbs. And Steve Kerr and Draymond Green said, let's go check out your son. They had an off day the next day. They'd already traveled over. So they went on an off night and to watch Celebrini play. And as Draymond said, quote, why wouldn't I go watch the next version of Sidney Crosby at the age of 17? So really cool that Steve Kerr and a lot of the coaches and support staff of the Golden State Warriors went and watched this young man play as a 17-year-old last year. And Steve Kerr and Draymond both said, this dude's going to be a rock star. And the youngster goes, I had an awful game. I love that attitude. This is not just a big deal. It's a massive deal for the Sharks.
Yeah, obviously it's a big deal for the Sharks. It's not, I don't think, a big deal overall in that the Sharks had the best odds with the worst record in the NHL of getting the number one overall pick. So it's not shocking to see the Sharks in this situation, but obviously it's a big deal if you can get the 17-year-old who just torched college hockey with 32 goals and 32 assists. And that's a really cool story about Golden State. Also a big deal that in this segment, James threw two hockey stories at me, not one, and also required college hockey analysis without any preparation whatsoever. That is proof to the listener that we have no idea what is going to be thrown at us on Big Deal, not a Big Deal. You just roll with the punches. I did good celebrating.
Was
right?
Either that or Ric Flair getting kicked out of a restaurant this weekend?
Well, yeah,
that's not surprising.
Yeah, that's not a big deal.
That's just on brand, actually.
That's like Tuesday for him.
Coming up next here on Amber and Ian, we're going to get you ready for Mavericks Thunder. That game coming up at 9 p.m. Eastern, the coverage right here on ESPN Radio. We're hopping off air a little bit early tonight. The game will be tipping at 9:30 p.m. Eastern. So we will get you ready for that NBA action next on ESPN Radio. NBA playoffs are on ESPN Radio. Tune in tonight as the Thunder hosts the Mavs, presented by Indeed. Coverage begins at 9 p.m. Eastern on most ESPN radio stations and on Sirius XM Channel 80. That means Amber and Ian's hopping off air a little early tonight. We'll make way for that coverage in just about 10 minutes from now. Ian Fitzsimmons is cracking up laughing at me.
No, none of you. Was the Vanilla Ice and the return music for Sean Kelly? Just kind of curious, right? He's on the call tonight.
Mavs, we are bringing in Sean Kelly. Yes, he is on the call tonight for Mavs Thunder. Welcome, Sean. Was that music for you?
Thank you. It takes me back to, like, high school everything. So, right. Man,
high school everything.
I mean, that song was pervasive. I think probably like my senior or junior year of high school.
That's
so
it.
Every homecoming dance, prom, graduation post, you know, go be locked up in some place overnight so nobody goes out and does something dumb. That song was played over and over again. So thanks for taking me back.
It still slaps. I still maintain that is an excellent song. Sean, it is. Come on. It's got you.
Look, if I'm scanning through the dial and that song comes on, I'm probably not staying there more so now than ever before. I don't know why.
Yeah. Oh, I am. I'll linger.
I know
I'm
you.
I'm good. You're lying. That's a blatant lie from you, Kelly. That's a blatant lie.
I'm still singing every word.
And I hope Corey Alexander is still on a headset listening to this right now, because it will come up at some point in the broadcast. I hope.
I
walked into a house party once in West Palm some years ago, not that many years ago, and the front door opened and Vanilla Ice was on the other side. Like, he opened the door to me and then he greeted me, reached out his hand, he shook my hand, and he said, "Hi, I'm Rob. Nice to meet you." And I thought, "You ain't Rob, buddy.
You're Vanilla."
Like, you're Vanilla. But okay.
You're Vanilla.
But we'll play that game.
Amber, I hate to break this to you, but there's nothing about that story that I can relate to. Starting with house party in West Palm.
All right. Let's go to your wheelhouse here with Mavs Thunder. Fair criticism by you. The Mavericks' record against the Thunder in the regular season, a 1-3 record. They had a -27 point differential against this team this season. Do you think anything from the regular season here, though, translates to the postseason, Sean? Or are we just supposed to scrap what we saw and this is a whole different series at this point?
Zero. Throw it out. Only one time did we see a game where both Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving played for the Mavericks against the Thunder. Corey and I have been talking all day today about the transformation of Dallas's defense that occurred in the second week of March, at the end of the first week of March. They're a different ball club too. And then their final meet of the year was basically the last game of the regular season, which is like a preseason game in the NBA. So I just think there's zero we take away from the head-to-head matchups during the regular season. What we do take away from the regular season is that the Thunder are who we thought they were. They are the number one seed in the West. They do come in here with 57 wins off a sweep of New Orleans, and they do the things that they know to do. I mean, that's one way to navigate a young team through, is make sure they know who they are and don't change that. And then Dallas, you know, evolved in the last 2 months of the regular season and has been playing elite defense in the NBA, and that's why they're in the second round too. So that's what I'll take away from the regular season.
How much is pace of play important to both of these teams tonight?
Yeah, I'm not so sure I know, because part of me wants to say this is going to be in the mud a little bit. Both teams like to play defense. Both teams have guys that can lock somebody up. But at the same time, the open floor is awfully good too. When you talk about the way that Kyrie and Luka and that offense operates on the Dallas side, they're fleet of foot, their bigs run pretty well, good rim runners there. And then Oklahoma City is not a lob it into the low post and put you on their back and post them up all night. So I can't tell. I'm waiting to see who wants to kind of lob the first serve out there and say, hey, are we running tonight or are we going to do the half court thing here? So I can't give you a great answer on what kind of tempo I think we're going to see.
OKC likes to push the pace. Their pace did drop a little bit there against the Pelicans.
Right.
Sean Kelly, ESPN Radio play-by-play on Mavs Thunder Game 1 tonight, kind enough to join us here on Amber and Ian. Who is the X factor in this matchup, Sean? Not the usual suspects, but who do you think that we should be taking a look at that we might not be paying attention to going into this thing?
Well, Jalen Williams might be on the Oklahoma City side, as he might be asked to do a few more things because of that duo that you have to deal with Luka and Kyrie. We already know that Lu Dort is basically going to be trying to take care of Luka Doncic. He'll have to be careful about not getting into foul trouble, stay on the floor as a starter in that lineup. For the Dallas Mavericks, with Maxi Kleba out, some guys have to be in a position not to foul so much. And, look, when it comes to the evolution of this team, the trade that gets them to two big players, P.J. Washington is in that mix. I think that he has to shoot from three better, 31% so far in the postseason. And I think that, obviously, he has to remain the same kind of factor that he provided to be when he and Gafford really, truly kind of put their stamp on what their role would be with this basketball club.
SK, do us all a favor. Let us live vicariously. Get to that P.J. Carlissimo hole-in-the-wall Italian joint in that strip mall and take the entire crew and go feast and send us pictures. Let us live vicariously.
Look, that place, again, you said strip mall. Don't be fooled by the strip mall.
It's unbelievable.
And then ask to go to the back room. There is an actual back room in that restaurant that is decorated in true prison art. Prison art by former members of the organized family, if you will, that spent their time while they were in the joint. And the great thing is there's a button underneath the table, and the door only opens for the server or anybody else if you click the button and allow the back door to open for them to come in. Pretty cool.
Strip ball, back room, spending time in the
prison
joint.
Art.
I don't know if you guys are selling
me on this.
Not that I
would know anything about places to eat, but that's just, you know.
Have a great call, SK. Thank you, buddy.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sean. Appreciate you. Again, Mavs, Thunder, Game 1. The coverage begins right here on
that
ESPN Radio.
Awesome.
Now, in just a few minutes from now, when we hop off air, the tip-off in that game is at 9:30 p.m. Eastern. We have a game in the NBA, though, in action currently, Ian. Boston up on Cleveland right now, 99-79, just under 10 minutes left in the fourth. So the Celtics in control of this thing. Coming up next, Game 1, Mavs Thunder on ESPN Radio.